This is a Collider.com audio interview.
So, Seth, I have to ask, as a Canadian Jew, would
yeah.
you like to play a Canadian Jew in a movie?
Well, having no real skills, I always try to play characters close to myself. I don't know. I say sorry instead of sorry, and Judd's just tired of editing around it, I think, so we embraced it on this one. And, yeah, as much as I'd like to not play a Jew, this was the hand I was dealt, you know?
Seth, I imagine even fake movie set scenes with Catherine Hagel are pretty cool. So can you talk about those few scenes?
Yeah, it's really kind of nerve-wracking, you know? If I was 18 years old, that would have been literally as far as I'd ever been with a girl. It was, you're dry humping. I don't know if you can say that or not, but I'll say it. You're dry humping a girl who you don't know very well. And I was just afraid I was going to sweat on her. That was my major concern, that I was just going to drip a big gob of sweat onto her head. It's nerve, but you know, luckily they're comedic sex scenes, you know, supposedly. So that kind of helps, you know. It's not like I'm supposed to be acting sexy, you know. It's, you know, there's lines like, this is my new record in there. So that kind of alleviates some of the pressure that would be put on me to look attractive and sexy, which is nice.
Hi, Seth.
Hi.
I'm curious about any sex comedy. You know, you're Canadian, as was said. And
yes.
I'm wondering if Porky's had been a major...
Porky's? Film. You mean the highest grossing Canadian film of all time? Yes, that was... yeah, Porky's one of those movies, like, I used to... they played it in Canada, you know, and I would, like, tape bits of it, like the nude scenes, and, like, compile them out. So, like, I've seen, like, the 9 minutes of Porky's where people are naked, like, 1,000 times over and over. The rest I've recently caught up on, but, yeah, that was... That introduced me to adulthood, Porky's, I think. I mean... You know, Bachelor Party is a movie I always really liked. It's pretty dirty for a Tom Hanks movie, especially. There's some, like, bestiality jokes in there and stuff like that. That one always kind of shocked me. And, you know, Kevin Smith was a... He was an inspiration language-wise, I would say. His movies were some of the first movies I saw just people cursing up a storm, and that was very amusing to me. So I think we took a nod from that, definitely, just, you know, when it comes to sexual language, anyway. I don't know, though. What else? What other ones are good? Any suggestions? What should I see?
Last Mirror,
I haven't seen that. I'm in. I'll go see it.
So, Seth, is the underlying theme of this is that almost any guy is redeemable, or is it just something special about Ben?
I think almost any guy is redeemable, yeah. If you haven't done something truly terrible, more than anything, you know, our movies have a very simple message, which is just kind of try to be a good guy or girl, you know, just, you know, do the right thing, as Spike Lee says, you know, that's kind of all you need, I think. You can kind of have people say all the filthy, despicable things you want and kind of have them do stupid things, but as long as you get that character's kind of trying to be a good person throughout it all, then that's kind of all I need to latch on to. It's simple, but, you know, I think emotionally speaking, it's true to, you know, my experience with people. If you meet someone, you know, everyone has their shortcomings, but as long as you see they're generally kind of trying to do well by others, then, you know, they're very redeemable, I find, so...
When you started doing stand-up in Vancouver at the age of 13, how outrageous and R-rated were you?
I was clean. I didn't work blue back then, mostly because my mother came to a lot of my shows, I think. I was just embarrassed and had no... My life wasn't that R-rated back then, I guess. I mean, I always try to be truthful to kind of what's going on with my life and kind of my friends and my experiences, so... You know, then it was more about, like, my grandparents and, you know, playing video games and my bar mitzvah and stuff like that. It hadn't yet delved into the filthy world that I now occupy.
To clarify, where was it that you first did a stand-up gig.
At a lesbian bar in Vancouver called The Lotus. I just thought it was ladies' night. I didn't really get what was happening.
Can you talk a little about what your responsibilities as executive producer entailed? And also, who did you play in Donnie Darko?
In Donnie Darko, I play Ricky, is my character's name. There's kind of these two bullies in the movie. Me and Alex Greenwalt play them. We kind of torment Jake Gyllenhaal and Jenna Malone's characters throughout, and then at the end I throw Jenna Malone into the road where she gets hit by a car. It's kind of not, it's not that big a role. It was my first movie. It was a great experience. I didn't get it at all and still don't, but had a good time. What was the other thing you asked? Sorry. Oh, executive producer. My duties are basically just be near Judd at all times, kind of. I always, you know, I tell him, I'm just going to give my opinion until you tell me to shut up and take what you have, you know, take what you will and don't take what you won't. Basically, I'm just kind of there throughout all the casting and all the meetings with the studio about the script, and I, you know, help as much as I can in the writing process and the rewriting process. And, you know, there weren't many on this movie, but on days I wasn't acting, I would come to set and just kind of help think of jokes for the other, you know, scenes in the movie and the other characters. And kind of throughout editing, I'm involved, giving notes and going to the preview screenings, just doing what I can. Keeping off the couch, yeah.
This movie has the potential to be a big hit and make you a leading man in romantic comedies. Any thoughts about that?
We'll see. I don't know. It's a strange concept, I guess, that, you know, romance is something people want to see me do on film, but I'd fun. Why not? I'll keep doing it, sure.
Were you familiar with MrSkin.com before making the movie?
No. yes, of course I was. Yeah, you know, originally in the movie, there was no Mr. Skin. We actually, I can't remember how it played out, actually, but there was no, the movie originally took place in a universe that Mr. Skin did not exist, and then it just started to really amuse us, like, the notion that Mr. Skin did exist and we just hadn't heard of it, and it just made us laugh a lot as we were writing, so that's kind of where that came from. But yeah, definitely the idea of our webpage came from Mr. Skin.
You've got about three or four films that you had a hand in writing the script in various forms of production or post-production. So I'm curious, how often are you writing?
How often am I writing? Pretty much whenever I'm not acting, which is often, I guess, or doing press now. Yeah, I mean, as soon as I finish, you know, doing the Knocked Up promotion, I will start writing again, and basically between movies, I mean, that's kind of what, it's kind of my default mode is sitting at home in my underwear writing. That's where I want to be, if no one expects me to be anywhere else.
Which creative hat do you enjoy wearing the most?
Which creative what?
Hat.
I'm going to say, I mean, with movies like Knocked Up, where I, you know, have a significant amount of creative input, and Superbad, you know, which we just did, I really love doing them both. I mean, it's hard to pick one. I mean, ideally, I would kind of just keep doing this and be able to kind of wear both hats at once. I mean, I view them, they're kind of the same thing to me. I mean, they're both just kind of making movies. It's not really compartmentalized in two separate halves of my brain, really. It's just kind of, it's all part of the same goal. And yeah, I like to be as involved as I can.
Seth, on this set, how much improv was there, especially with your slacker buddies? And then, were you involved in the test screening process at all? Because, you know, what can you tell us about that?
The first part, yes, there was tons of improv in all the scenes, especially, I mean, yeah, the ones with me and my friends. You know, we hired my actual friends because, you know, we always hope that those dynamics kind of, you know, show on film, and, you know, our hope was that you'd be able to tell that we're actually friends and that we actually all know each other really well, and kind of the best way to get that stuff out is just through improvising and being loose and kind of letting the actual dynamics play out a bit. I mean, it's funny that, like, Martin's the guy with the beard, because Martin's always the guy that gets shit from all of us, and, like, it just kind of suits him so well to be this put-upon guy who's kind of constantly just getting it from all of us. And, you know, it's those little things that really amuse me, especially watching it. I just think, like, that's so weird, and his name's Martin in the movie. It's very confusing in a way. But, yeah, we improvise heavily, you know. Generally, we shoot the script once or twice, and then we just kind of go off. Harold Ramis put it really well. I was talking about it, and he said, you know, when we did Ghostbusters and stuff, we would always say, like, the script is the worst case scenario. Like, the script is what we have if we can't think of anything better. And that's pretty much what we do. And, you know, it was a great script to begin with, so it was a pretty good worst case scenario, we all thought. But, yeah, we basically just kind of see what else will come up, you know, major whole Munich thing, stuff like that. I mean, that wasn't even implied in the script at all. That stuff just kind of comes up as you're shooting. And, yeah, as far as the test screenings, I was at every single one. I kind of hide in the back, try not to laugh too loud, because people recognize my laugh, apparently. Luckily, it was a pretty pleasant test screening process. So, you know, people seem to like it. Got good reaction, so didn't make me want to kill myself, which makes it much nicer, I would say.
Hey, Seth, can you talk a little bit about the birth scene? I mean, were you grossed out or not? And then can you tell us a little bit about your past, how you grew up and wanted to do this in the first place?
Okay, the birth scene was, I mean, I was always a big proponent of showing, you know, the whole Megillah, as they say, I guess. I just thought it would be funny and shocking, and it kind of just reminded me of, like, Something About Mary, where you see Ben Stiller's zipper in the crotch. It just seemed like something that is always implied in movies and never really 100 feet tall. So I just knew that, you know, that reaction would be fun from the audience. It's one of those things where just, you know, I just couldn't imagine how people would react. I assume they would just scream, which is pretty much what happens. But it was stressful to shoot that scene. Katie was really, she actually, like, pulled her back out, I think, like, pushing and kind of screaming so much. I just kind of had to stand there and hold her hand, which I felt a lot like I imagine how a real husband feels during the birth, which is just kind of, it's her show, stay out of the way, and try not to ruin everything. It was weird to film, I have to say. As far as my past goes, yeah, I started doing stand-up in Vancouver when I was around 13, and then I got cast on Freaks and Geeks by Judd when I was 16, and I moved to L.A. and sunk my claws into him and haven't let go ever since.
You talk about the many characters you play in Fanboys, and also with Superbad, which you co-wrote, it's supposed to be very, very R-rated with Frank's sexual talk and everything like that.
Yes, all involving teens, according to the MPAA. That was the big thing.
Are you going to try to bring back that dirty genre of, you know, teens talking and, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we really want to. That is, you know, our prime directive with Superbad was to kind of bring back. I mean, I don't know where we were bringing it back from. I mean, maybe movies like Fast Times and stuff like that. I mean, that's stuff we really like, and that kind of has a really relatable feel to it, and the language feels true to life. We hadn't even seen that when we started writing Superbad. I mean, we were 14 years old when we started writing it. I mean, it was born out of a very pure desire to just see kids acting how we acted on film and kind of speaking how we speak and spoke, and it just happened to be really dirty, and it also is just what made us laugh. I mean, when me and my writing partner Evan Goldberg were writing it, I mean, we were, you know, teenagers in Vancouver. There was no real implication that it would ever get made into anything. It was really just to amuse ourselves, and unfortunately, really filthy, filthy jokes is what amuses us. So that's what we wrote. But yeah, I mean, I think it's just kind of was born out of a desire to, yeah, see you know, teen characters that were a lot like what we were like when we were in high school, you know. As far as fanboys goes, I haven't seen the final movie. I play several kind of small characters throughout it. My good friend Jay Baruchel is in it, who is here today. You may speak to him later. Yeah, I don't know ultimately what my roles in that are. I hope they're funny. Seemed fun as we did it.
Seth, to complete a thought from earlier, how does a 13-year-old comedian get hooked into a lesbian bar?
You sign up. You stand. I mean, the first time there was actually like a workshop that was being held out of the bar, where you basically like go in and learn, or like they kind of tell you the loose format for writing a stand-up joke, and then you get up at the end and you perform it in front of everyone. And from there, you just kind of start getting invited out. Someone who was there, I know this guy who runs this other comedy room. Why don't you come out and do 5 minutes? And then, you know, after that, you kind of get invited to do 10 minutes, and then you kind of are making $50 every few weeks, and you don't need, to work at McDonald's.
But what about Freaks and Geeks that is such a cauldron now for comedy production and new people all being together those many years later?
It's amazing. I don't know. I mean, it's funny. I look back at Freaks and Geeks and I'm terrified at how little thought I put into it. I mean, I think I was just young and inexperienced, but it never even really dawned on me at the time that, like, this was a great show that we were doing and all these actors were amazing. It just kind of seemed, you know, so there and given. Looking back, I mean, it was just a great show with, you know, a lot of really talented people involved in it, and we all got along really well, so I think that's why we just keep wanting to work together. I mean, I just finished a movie with James Franco a few days ago, and it's amazing to be able to work together again. I mean, we kept looking at each other saying, like, if you told us, you know, 8 years ago that someone would, you know, allow us to be in a movie that we're the stars of, you know, I would have never believed it. You know, it's amazing to us.
Speaking of Pineapple Express, how dirty is the humor in that, and how maybe action packed is it?
Sexually speaking, Pineapple Express is not nearly as dirty as, say, Superbad or maybe even Knocked Up. It just isn't really a sexual movie at all. It's more of a marijuana themed kind of buddy comedy, more in the tone of, say, 48 Hours or Midnight Run or something like that. But, I mean, action-wise, it's pretty jam-packed. We got car chases and shootouts and explosions and me holding many machine guns, which is amusing to me. I don't know. I hope other people find it entertaining, but it's, you know, we really, you know, when you say you're making an action comedy, just like anything else, you know, we thought it really had to function as both an action movie and as a comedy. Like, with a romantic comedy, it needs to function in those worlds as well, you know. So we took that very seriously.
Last question.
What strikes you most about Judd as far as setting a mood on set, just kind of creating a sort of convivial comedy environment, you know?
What's amazing about Judd is how, just open the set feels, just how, you know, you can do no wrong, which is nice, you know. He'll never tell you not to say something. He might tell you not to say it again, but he won't tell you he won't tell you not to say it in the first place. You know, you just, you know, you can do whatever you want, and he gives you the time and the film and the focus to really get the best out of people. I mean, people who had one line and Knocked Up would say how it was the best acting experience I'd ever had, because they would have gotten a whole roll of film to find the funniest version of that one line. You know, everyone kind of gets their moment in the sun and, you know, the opportunity to do whatever they think is funny, you know. And it's just amazing. It feels very communal, and you know that you have the time and the film, and it's just, you really feel like you can mine the humor out of whatever it is that you're doing.